Welcome to the Go Hard Chick podcast. This is your host, Crystal Holmes. And today I bring you episode 15, Empowerment for Creative Journeys. Ignite your true expression in your art, business, and life with my guest, Dara Grimes. Go Hard Chicks, I'm super excited about this episode. Well, I'm excited about all of them, but I'm particularly excited because I'm joined in this episode with my friend, Dara Grimes, who is a licensed clinical social worker, counselor, and founder of A Better Mind, A Better Me. I have known Dara since we were infants. We both grew up in Gary, Indiana, and I have watched Dara grow from being a little girl to a powerhouse concert tour manager for artists such as Babyface and Jennifer Lopez, just to name a few. Then she made a pivot and became a licensed clinical social worker. Now, Dara's quite modest, so she may not have really wanted me to drop those names, Go Hard Chicks, but I just wanted you to know just what kind of dynamo powerhouse we have on today as a guest. In this episode, we discuss our creative backgrounds and growth in our careers throughout the years. And we talk about how you can combine both a traditional career with a creative one. This episode is all about empowerment and encouragement. We provide some tips, or Dara, the expert, provides tips on how you can move through life gracefully and without fear and live your dreams. So Go Hard Chicks, welcome to the Go Hard Chick podcast. Go Hard Chick, Dara Grimes. Welcome to the Go Hard Chick podcast, Dara. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am fabulous, and I'm so glad you're here today because this is a topic that I'm really excited about this topic. I mean, you and I have known each other pretty much since birth.
Yes, this is true.
And so to see like your journey and how we've both evolved over the years and kind of how we've come full circle and are back to things or interests that we've always loved, it's really exciting.
I agree. It is very exciting because I've been looking forward to having this conversation for a long time. So I'm glad to be here.
So, I mean, I have to let you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. There's a whole lot there, listeners, because she's a fabulous Go Hard Chick. But I want Dara to share her history and background, a little bit of it.
Oh, wow. Let's see. Well, as you know, and maybe other people do not know this, but my humble background began at Emerson Visual for the Performing Arts, Visual and Performing Arts. And I was a dance major there. And I think I had my love for entertainment, all things the arts. And so it just made sense that, you know, I would attend such a school, which kind of took me down like a really, I guess, non-traditional path that led to social work somehow. But before I became a social worker, I worked in the entertainment music business for probably about 15 or more plus years while trying to figure out how to help people and how to empower them. And so I decided to become a social worker. So that's kind of my path, so to speak, very non-traditional path that kind of combines, I guess, the creative and the traditional.
Now, listeners, Dara's being modest. Yes, we both attended Emerson Visual and Performing Arts School in Gary, Indiana, which was a fabulous, it was one of the few performing art schools at that time in the country, if I recall correctly.
That's correct.
And, we had the audition and to get into this school as fourth graders, I believe, because we both started in the fifth grade. And Dara was a dance major. So we had majors at this school, similar to like what you would have in college. And I was a visual arts major. But Dara was a fabulous, and probably still is, fabulous dancer.
I'm laughing. Well, thank you for that plug, Crystal.
And I know, really, like, we used to be mesmerized by watching you and some of the other dance majors perform. And it's funny because there was so much talent in that school. And for those that don't know, Gary, Indiana is, I mean, it's a majority Black city. So a majority of the kids at this school, fifth graders on up to 12th grade, I mean, they were Black. Mm-hmm. And they were singers and they were dancers and actors and artists. And it was just beaming with talent. And when Dara and I were talking about this topic, it's funny how few of us actually left that school and entered adulthood and continued on with our talents.
Yes. I mean, and you were amazing visual artists as well, but you know, it is, I guess I was being modest, but I think that's part of the challenge too. And the topic that we're talking about today is modesty, you know, and which could be a barrier to achieving one's creative or actualizing one's creative goals and dreams. So that was actually, I'm glad that you pointed that out because I think that's definitely one of my obstacles that I have to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something we all have to overcome. And, you know, looking back, I mean, Emerson was pretty good with academics as well. And I always felt like there was this push-pull thing, this tension between the arts and the academics.
Yes, I think we had to do them simultaneously. Like, we had to be great at both the academic Super Bowl, you know, while you are practicing your craft and preparing for a recital or what have you, you know. So it was the duality, I guess, that we all had to have. You know, we had to be able to multitask and we had to do all things very well. So I think going to Emerson did help me prepare for this journey that I'm on, which does now makes more sense than it did to me before as I was on it. Like, didn't know, like, what does one have to do with the other? How does the creative and the traditional go together, you know? And now it makes more sense because of the foundation that we both had. And that was going to a performing arts school that was actually, you know, heavily focused too on academic achievement.
And I don't know how you felt, but I mean, we both went on to college. You went to Howard University.
Yes.
And, you know, I went on to Spelman. But I felt like I had to choose. Like, I couldn't do both. I couldn't have both the arts and academia. I had to pick one.
Right. And that was my challenge, too, is actually when I went to Howard, my major was psychology, but I minored in dance and French. Go figure. I mean, I felt like maybe at that time people thought I was all over the highway with it because I was really still torn between the creative and academia. So I did both and I carried a lot of credit hours, you know, like 27 credit hours, which is insane because I had two minors and a major because I think I always knew that I would always do something creative or something in the arts, but I also saw myself doing something more traditional as well. So you're right. It was very difficult to kind of choose. And I don't think I ever chose.
Well, but that's good. Because I felt like I had to pick. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Spelman, I did not do anything with art. I didn't even minor in it. And as I entered into my senior year, I really regretted that. And I started taking as many art classes as I could then. And then I realized in my senior year, when everybody else is either applying for jobs or applying for graduate schools or whatever, I wanted to do something with the arts. I wanted to do something with visual art. Mm-hmm. And I was upset with myself that I had missed out on all those 4 years and I didn't take that path. And I remember in my senior year at Spelman, a friend of ours that is from Gary, and he was, at the time, he was a student at Morehouse. And he's since passed, you know, God rest his soul. I remember having a conversation with him about my dilemma. Like, I didn't want to go to law school now.
I want to do something with art. And he said, what are you talking about? You're going to let all your brains, all those smarts go to waste? And that really, Dar, that really did a number on me.
Did it? Why?
Yes.
You felt guilty or what is it? You felt shamed? It's like, why are you not actualizing what you were destined to actualize? Or why did it do a number on you?
Because it made me feel stupid. Like, what do you mean you want to do something with art? You need to just go. You got all these good grades and been on this law path. You need to get yourself together and get a real job.
Which is something I think people like us always have heard and hear. I understand. I mean, I get that. It's like you feel badly for like wanting to be creative and then trying to fulfill some sort of like, I don't know, dream that other people have, how they see you and not how you see yourself. And then we kind of get pigeonholed into like one category. Like you come to believe that you can only do one thing well. That's it. You do this thing for however many years, you retire, you get a pension, whatever, you know, and then that's it.
Or if you have any level of academic success.
Yeah.
That you have to follow a certain path. And that path often doesn't include the arts.
Very true. That is true. And even though we went to a performing arts school where you thought that that would be promoted, it really wasn't, I don't think. Not during the time while we were there.
No, it wasn't.
It really wasn't. It's like, this is great that you're an amazing artist or you're an amazing dancer, but yeah, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to pay the bills? So that's a nice hobby, you know?
Right. Like, I don't remember, like, I guess junior, senior year, our arts teacher, or at least any of my art teachers saying, hey, you could go to, you know, Savannah School of Art and Design and major in art history, or you could go to Paris and tour, whatever. I don't remember those conversations, but I do remember, you know, we got this PSAT test coming up and y'all need to take this test and be ready.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I always felt, and I still feel this way, but not as much as I did before. Like I had this dual life, like I was in a struggle. Like I'm always battling between, like you said, like we're just saying, not good and evil, but like, you know, where am I going to focus all my attention? Like academics, right? You know, or that type of success, or really honing my creative side and my craft. And I really also, I understand now what you're saying. Like I felt guilty about thinking about that and why I just didn't pick the one that to everyone else made the most sense, like the path of least resistance. Why was I always going to the other side? You know what I mean? Like, I understand what you're saying. Like it's a challenge, I think, that has kind of plagued me all these years later. We are a long way away from, you know, Emerson. Heck, the school doesn't even exist anymore, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, that's tragic. Because I believe, I mean, as an aside, I believe the arts are very important. Mm-hmm. No matter what a person does with their life, you know, it gives you a level of creativity and freedom that...
Right. Thinking outside the box, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And it's okay. And acceptance. But I don't think I got to the point of accepting that it's okay to live in the gray. Or to think outside the box.
Well, yeah, I didn't come to that until, God, when my daughter was born. So my late 30s. Mm-hmm. Then it was like I found this new love and passion for art. Mm-hmm. And I mean, over the years, I struggled with it. I would go back and I would... say I want to open up an art gallery. And of course I never did anything with that.
I remember that.
Then it was
I remember that.
Then I actually, as I was practicing law, I applied to SCAD, Savannah School of Art and Design.
Uh-huh.
For a master's in art history, and I got accepted. And they even gave me a little scholarship money, but I did not go. Huh. And it was because at that time, SCAD was only in Savannah. Mm-hmm. And I was living in Atlanta. But they were opening up an Atlanta campus. So that's why I applied, because I thought, I can practice law during the day and get this master's in art history mm-hmm. on the side. And I applied and I was accepted. And then they said, oh, we're not going to offer that program on our Atlanta campus now.
Okay.
You'll have to go to Savannah.
Oh.
I was like, I can't go to Savannah.
You had a life already established.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I just let it go. And I didn't try to do anything with art really or anything creative mm-hmm. until after my daughter was born.
Do you regret that decision?
Yeah, sometimes I do. Mm-hmm. Because now I realize I don't have to be, what's the term, monolithic?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't have to just be a lawyer. I mean, I think it's so much, we're so much deeper than that. I can do whatever I want. I can be a lawyer. I can have this podcast. I can make jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can be a bodybuilder. I mean...
Right. You can be whatever you want to be.
So it's not just about the arts. You know, it's you can do whatever you want.
And I think that's good for people to know, especially now during this pandemic that we're going through and just social change. There's a lot of things that are happening. I think if we had been experiencing this dilemma or whatever now, I think we would not have been as afraid to just go for it. Right now, I think people are just forced into like, having to figure it out, like, because if you want to eat, if you want to be happy, if you want to live, you kind of have to figure out that for yourself. There's no company anymore really that you can go to and work for 40 years and get a great retirement, you know, or that you would be terribly happy. Now it's like, I want to be happy doing what I do. I want to feel fulfilled. I want to do that. Whereas before, I think when we went to school, it's like, who cares if you're happy? That's what I always heard. It's like, you want to do what? You want to be happy in what you do. Oh, you're funny. You know, it's like, oh, you don't get it. You know, it's like, you have to pay the bills. You just do it until you can't do it anymore. And then you can be happy once you retire. I never really liked that concept. I never accepted
Once you're 70 years
old. Once you're 70 years old, it's like, who knows I'm going to be around to enjoy any of it, you know? I always rejected that. Like, I think just at my core, and that's probably why I ended up doing what I was doing, because I rejected, I guess, the status quo in part. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't accept that. Like, my spirit it just would not allow me to really just kind of accept it. So I think that's what led me to moving to Los Angeles and doing something in the arts. When I couldn't dance anymore, I had a knee injury that I sustained while we were at Emerson. I'm sure you remember that. Thanks to a mutual friend of ours who kicked me during rehearsal by accident. But anyway, it led me to saying, I have to do something creative. And it led me into film development, which I had no interest in. I wanted to be a casting director, but I figured, you know, a way in was a way in. And so, you know, I took this internship at the time it was a very prestigious, production company house. And I was the first African-American intern ever. Like, just, that's it. Like, they were making huge, you know, blockbuster movies. And this was like 97, 90. Yeah. And like, I was there and I was entering into a world that I knew nothing about. And I didn't really feel that confident, even with all my educational background. I felt like a fish out of water, right? But I was excited about it all the same because I didn't know where it was going to take me. And I was just so, like, excited to be on that journey, which ended up leading me to the music business years later. But in between all that, I was in graduate school and trying to figure out the social work thing. So, you know, after like 15 years later, I was in the music industry and it's like as a tour manager, and never thought, I didn't know what a tour manager was, how that tied into anything that I was doing. I was just in the entertainment industry and I was happy about it. But again, one of the first, you know, African-American, you know, female tour managers that did not exist in the 90s, really. It just didn't. And so I was like, wow, I can do this. I can have a real quote unquote job that is creative. And so that wasn't widely supported by my peers or anybody. Like, people were hating on me a lot, you know, for even thinking, daring to do it. And so everybody was saying, yeah, that's nice, but what if this doesn't last? What are you going to do with the rest of your life? I'm like, well, can we just kind of live in this moment for a while? Like, I'm doing something that I never thought possible. And quite frankly, no one else thought possible. So, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's been an amazing journey. And I think, like, now, even being a social worker, working in a military, facility, I still feel like, man, I don't have to abandon all that I know, but how do I combine these two? How do I empower other people? How do I encourage other people to, as I say, do life better creatively, right? How do I do that? And that's kind of what leads us, I guess, to having part of this conversation today is how do we do that? How do we inspire each other? How do we encourage each other to do life better? Whatever that means.
And that's key. And I want you to know, like, I always admired the fact that you picked up and moved to LA. I thought that was so
insane.
I thought it was super cool. And the haters, I guess they stopped hating once you started getting on those tours and they were asking you for tickets.
Yes. And that was always like, oh, so yeah, can I get,
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, and I guess that's the thing. And I think what people need to understand too is you don't have to abandon your day job, if you will.
Right.
You can still do other stuff that you enjoy. Or if you want to let go of that day job, you can do that too.
That's true. You can.
That's where I get a little hung up. Yeah. I'm like, there's a level of fear of letting go of the day job.
Yes, because the day job pays the bills. And I get that. But like you said, you know, you don't have to abandon one. You can kind of embrace all of them. But it's just trying to find the balance of how to do all of that. And still being true to yourself. It's like being authentic. I find that to be the challenge. Like, you know, I think my day job does not lend itself to my own authenticity. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, all the things I'm in counseling and I'm in therapy with people and I'm telling them to be their authentic self. Are you being authentic to yourself in your path? And it's like, I'm really not totally. I'm fearful. Like, you know, I'm fearful of the unknown. And I think to myself, wait a minute. You were fearful before when you were in your 20s and you just picked up and moved, left DC and moved to Los Angeles with just a couple of bags. I didn't even take my car. And I just landed and had an internship, of course, an unpaid one, and I didn't know what I was doing. And I took the risk then. Of course, you know, I had no real responsibilities, but I've done it before. So why am I afraid now?
Well, that's the thing. Now we got real
bills. We got real bills. Like, there's more at stake.
Right. And yeah. I think it's not just the bills. I think, at least for me or in some of my other peers, there is this level of, you can't do that. What will people think? You are a doctor, lawyer, social worker, insert whatever career it is.
Right.
You know, what will your clients think? You know,
yeah.
What is your mama going to think?
Right.
Right.
What do people think? And I think that's, again, that's part of, and I call them, you know, self-imposed mental roadblocks. Right. And if we can put them there, right, we have the power to remove them. It's like, why are we bound by those handcuffs? Why do we do that? Why do we chain ourselves to the other end of that, you know, handcuff, if you will? What does it matter what your mama thinks, you know, or your peers, your colleagues, or even sometimes your friends or significant other? Why does that matter? You know, I ask myself, why am I bound to that? Why am I afraid of what other people think? I did it before. I didn't care what other people thought. I moved to LA and it was so much hate, you know, and so many disparaging comments. And I did it in spite of. And I think I use it as my motivation to be successful in whatever that looked like for me, you know, at the time. You know, and I have a hard time recapturing that. It's like, how did I get that back? Because I really need it right now.
Right. And that's the thing. Like for me, I remember just wanting to make my mom proud. Mm-hmm. And I think becoming a lawyer was probably more of a dream of hers than it was of mine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
And I think when I came to that realization, I knowingly kept going because I thought mom will be happy, even though I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I've always been torn. See, whereas I was like, I guess a bit of a rebel and I wanted to please, you know, my parents. And I wanted to make them proud and happy as well. But I think it was just a part of me. It's just like, I was like, I have to be true to myself because the one thing I would always say, I don't want to look back 10 years from now or even, you know, 5 years from now and say, I should have done that. I didn't want to have any regrets. And even though my path was just so uncertain and twisted and twisting and, you know, turning and all that, I don't regret having made the decision to just pick up and go. And I also don't regret having gone back to graduate school in the middle of it all. You know, I don't regret. At first, I was like, man, I'm really upset that I took this time away and moved and went to University of Michigan and was like, okay, in this social work program that I really want to be in. But my mother's voice was in the back of my head. What's your plan B? You got to have something to fall back on. And so now looking back on, I don't regret having made that decision either. I just don't. I mean, it helped me, I guess, see what I actually need to do. And then I actually have the background experience to do both somehow.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, going to LA and following that path was, you know, considered risky and uncertain. But I think what people don't get is it's all a risk.
Yes.
All of it. Even if you go to grad school and you say you're going to be a whatever, a lawyer, a doctor, a social worker, a teacher, it's all a risk. None of this is guaranteed.
That's true. But I think back then it just seemed like you had more people succeeding taking this quote unquote safe route, right? I think you had more examples of people winning, so to speak, you know, I guess seeking out those more traditional careers. But, you know,
true.
You know what I mean? Now you see people on the more creative front, like people like us who did seek out the more traditional careers and they're doing the creative and they're successful at both. And like, wait a minute. Now you're seeing more examples of the creative process winning, so to speak, right? Like people are really, they're winning.
Yeah, they are.
And being more authentic, like true to themselves, which could encompass the traditional, right? And the creative, or just abandoning the traditional altogether and just saying, this is my creative path and I'm winning at that and it's okay.
And I think, because there are folks out there, I'm sure there are listeners that are like, well, I don't have a creative. I think we're all creative to some degree.
I think so too.
You may not be able to pick up a pencil and draw the perfect portrait, but we all have something. But that being said, I think people need to do what they love. And even if it's not your main job, I think you need to find whatever it is, and even if it's a hobby or whatever, and feel free to do it.
Right. Feel free to do it. Like, right. That part, it's just power in being free. There really is. And I think that's when you really start to live and be happy, right? And authentic and all of those things.
You know, it, just feel free to explore. Feel free to follow it. If you don't, feel free to explore. And I think that's been a challenge for a lot of professional folks, especially, and maybe not only professional, but it's this fear of the exploration.
Right. That is true. The fear of like, well, if I think about this and I try to make steps or strides to actualizing it, then what happens to the other part of me? What happens? Like, does that die? Do I have to continue to maintain it? Do I have to continue to cultivate? How do I maintain and cultivate all of these things at once? And like you said before, maybe you don't have to, but you do have to kind of let go of that fear of the unknown or whatever is tied or tethered to that. Like, we don't have to be tethered to anything, and really accepting that, which is the freeing part, accepting that you do not have to do just one thing. You don't have to be tethered to the thing that makes you money, right? Only you know, the thing that you enjoy and like to do can also be, you know, generate income and also give you some other type of pleasure or fulfillment, right? So I think just letting go of that mental tether to the things that we, you know, that make us money, that or that other people tell us that we do really well, we know we do well, but we don't necessarily want to continue to do in that way.
There are always going to be naysayers, or I remember, because I've, you know, since I had my daughter, I've done some of everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't really, I don't plan on stopping, but if I have an interest, I'm going to try it. So when I got into the bodybuilding world,
which is so amazing. It's like, wow.
I remember a former client of mine, you know, they go on the internet, they tried to find me, to locate my number, I guess, and they saw some bodybuilding photos. And he reached out to me and he said, you know, I want to retain you to help, you know, with whatever. Mm-hmm. But I see you bodybuild. Do you have time to practice law? And I'm like, huh?
Like, right.
I'm like, I'm in the gym an hour a day. Like, so I don't know what people think body. I guess they think we're in the gym all day. 24/7.
I think so. Yes.
No. But that freaked me out because I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want this to mess up my ability, you know, to practice law, or I don't want people to think. So I tried to take down as many photos as I could, but by then it was too late. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, changed all my names on any social media to a nickname, because I didn't mm-hmm. want people who were Googling Crystal Holmes to see
Crystal Holmes. Right. It's like, wow. Yeah.
So I'm like living this secret bodybuilding life and I'm scared to death. Mm-hmm. And then finally, one day I thought, what the hell am I doing? Like, I am not going to hide anymore. This is a hobby. Mm-hmm. This is something I enjoy. So, whatever.
Yes. I feel that way too. I call it my bipolar life. I always say that. It's like, and not the same thing disparaging about any type of, you know, bipolar condition diagnosis. But I do feel like it was like the ups and downs. You know, like I felt very like what you said is like, man, I don't want people, now that I'm doing social work and I'm doing this thing and people always, you know, ask me because it's on my resume or whatever. It's like, so what was it like working with so-and-so? And I'm like, okay, but this is not, you know what I mean? So this is not what we're supposed to be talking about. And then I thought, I guess that's not necessarily a bad way, because it actually had been a segue to, you know, like, I guess helping people through their journey therapeutically, like it just, you know, through mental health. It was just very strange. But I always felt like it had to be separate because that's what everybody else told me. You can't let people know that you are in the entertainment industry because that has nothing to do with therapy. It has nothing to do with social work.
And I think people have to be prepared that there are going to be some clients, employers, whatever.
They won't like that.
That are going to be, Right. They're not gonna like it. Mm-hmm. And then there are gonna be some that are cool with it. So I'm your girl if you're cool with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's why I say, people, it's like, if you're okay with this is me. This is, you know, like, I have done this and I still do these things in this other, you know, arena. And I'm also doing this, because I have experience in both. It's not like I'm just, you know, posing as a therapist. You know what I mean? Like, I went to school, I, you know, licensed and all of these things. And also, I'm not posing as all things, you know, music expert, tour manager. I did that for more than 14 plus years and still do it. So, you know, I have expertise in both, but the two actually can help me help you in whatever it is, whatever service that you're seeking from me. And so getting people to think that way has been, I think, the challenge. Like you said, employers, some of them are like, nope, you only do this or you're going to do that. You can't do both here. Right. I guess, which leads to like, well, I'm going to do it myself and open my own business and just, you know, and that's just what it's going to be, which that's the other part of it is too, is the entrepreneurial spirit that we might have to be looking at in order to achieve this creative journey, because you don't have anyone telling you that this is not okay.
Right. And you can target the type of clients or, you know.
Yeah, that you.
That are okay with that.
Right. And, you know, I found that since I started kind of putting myself out there like, you know, like this and saying, you know, not being ashamed of either background, people are like, wow, this is really interesting. It makes me actually, it kind of drew me to you because of that. Okay. You know.
Right.
And they're like, wow. And this is not an entertainment type situation, but it's, you know, maybe behavioral health or therapeutic something, but it really, I think people feel like you're a real person. And people have told me that's like, you're not just like the clinician or this professional went to school and has, you know, this alphabet soup, you know, letters behind your name. It's you, you're a real person. You had a whole another career before this. I can relate to you.
Exactly.
You know? And I found that it's like, wow, you know, that made me feel good. It's like, wow, I'm on the right path. Like, how I'm thinking about doing this is the right thing.
Each and every one of us, we have so many different layers and dimensions. And, you know, to suppress all of that, I think it is hard and it's not necessary.
Yeah, it is.
And I think I'm a better person because I have freed myself.
Yeah, you untethered yourself.
Right. I feel like, you know, exploring these different interests have given me a level of freedom. And it's made me a better mom, a better lawyer. I mean, all around.
Which is really interesting when you use the word, you know, a better plug, insert, whatever word. I mean, that also led me to when I started, you know, my LLC, I'm like, what is this? What is this? And I came up with, you know, the title, the company is called A Better Mind, A Better Me, you know, LLC, because it represents the two sides of me, right? And it's like a better mind and a better me, like the side, and they go together. You know, if you are healthy and you are understanding like all of these things, mind, body, and spirit go together, right? It makes you a better person. You know, whoever me is, that person is you. And you can do all of it. It's two sides, but there's really one. And how do you blend the two? How do you integrate those facets or those sides of yourself? So, you know, when you say it makes you a better mom, it makes you a better attorney, it makes you a better artist, it makes you a better person, then I think that just kind of encompasses everything that I think I'm trying to achieve by doing this, like launching this quote unquote enterprise, this business, if you will, this brand. I think it's more branding, I believe. So it's interesting that you say that. So, you know, it's true. It does make you a better person, but who are you? And it's all those things that you listed, you know, a better mom, a better attorney, a better artist, a better bodybuilder, a better insert whatever it is.
How do people that might be in the place I was nine-ish years ago or however long ago, where they want to explore, but they're afraid for whatever reason. How do they start?
I think I tell my clients all the time, I say, you start with yourself. I'm like, what does that mean? You look at yourself, who are you? You ask yourself, who am I? What do I want? Am I doing those things? And if not, why not? And what steps do I need to take to actually get to doing my life better and actualizing whatever dream it is that you have? So I'm a visual person, so I have to write down pros and cons. I have to write down everything on paper and just look at it. What am I doing currently, and what would I like to be doing? And then the third column is like, how do I actualize that? What steps do I need to take to doing that? So for instance, if you are interested in doing something that you have no experience with and you have no educational background, and you need a certification to do, what do you need to do in order to gain that certification and taking those steps and working towards gaining that? Because that will be like the springboard for you to move on to the next phase or whatever else that you, it'll open doors for the next part of it, of your process. So you first just look at yourself. You start with yourself. Are you happy? Do you know what you want? Are you doing what you like? Would you like to be doing something else? If yes, what is that? Am I doing that? Am I devoting some time each day to that goal, towards that goal? If not, you have to identify the barriers, you know, the things that are in the way of achievement.
Well, they're going to say, well, I don't have time.
Well, like a good friend of mine told me the other day, make time. That you make time. Because let's say if you sit and think about, like, okay, how much time do we actually waste sitting down, watching TV, or just sitting there and doing nothing? That could be time spent or, you know, focused on. It doesn't have to be a lot of time. I think people feel like, I have to devote 4 hours or to this, 20 minutes of dedicated and just concentration, just focusing on that is enough over each day, is better than 4 hours of sitting there thinking about why I'm not doing something or why I don't have time or how much time I don't have.
You know, especially in the beginning stages.
In the beginning stage, you just need a few minutes a day or three times a week or however, you know, just dedicated time, being purposeful though, of like shutting out the outside world. And I'm going to sit here for 20 minutes and I'm going to brainstorm. I'm just going to focus on this, whatever that is. And you do it the next day and the next day until it becomes more automatic where you're like, I'm going to make time. I'm going to cancel other things so that I can make time for me.
Right. Right.
You know,
you'll be amazed once you make the commitment.
Right.
How much time you really have.
Right. It's like, I can, you know, sleep like, well, I'm tired. It's like, yeah, but I'm tired doing this job that I don't necessarily like every day. So I'd rather be tired for a different reason. I'd rather feel tired because I stayed up creating and trying to, you know, take steps in actualizing my dream versus being tired because I stayed up late, you know, thinking about a job that I don't particularly like and how I don't have time to do something that I do want to do or I do like. So, you know, I think it's the way you think about it. You have to reframe your thoughts and your relationship with the thing that causes you distress or to make you feel, you know, frustrated or disappointed or that makes you avoid it, you know? So I think if you change your relationship with that thing, then you will do.
And you have to, you got to make the commitment.
You do have to make the commitment. You have to commit to doing it first, right? It's like, okay, what am I committing to? I'm committing to spending, you know, being very specific, 20 minutes a day on working on building this business or this brand or this concept or whatever it is that you have already decided that you want to do more of or to start doing. Then you will do it. The motivation will come. The inspiration will come once you, like you said, commit it to, and be specific. What are you committing to?
And I found it helps me in some instances to find like a tribe or a even if it's a tribe of one,
mm-hmm.
somebody that shares the same or similar interests,
mm-hmm.
that can, you all can encourage each other.
Sure. I agree with that. I think now that we're older and we are all kind of geographically separated and things, and now with COVID, it's kind of hard to find your tribe, so to speak, right? Everything is done very virtually, you know, in a virtual setting. So that kind of makes it challenging. But I do find it helpful to surround myself with like-minded people, even if we're not doing the same thing, but they're doing something out of the box, or, you know, something very creative. And I feel very inspired by people. And actually, it helps me with my accountability, like having an accountability partner, it kind of keeps me on the straight and narrow. So I do think that is very helpful to have a tribe, if you will, like you say, or a tribe of one, or just, you know, that has been helpful for me as well.
Yeah, I realized, especially when, you know, I got ready to start this podcast, that a lot of my good friends, people that I consider close friends, they're not on the same journey. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not on the creative journey. So bouncing ideas off of them or asking them for support or whatever it is, they're not on that journey, so they're not going to be able to help me with that.
Right. And I guess, though, yeah, so if someone was thinking, it's like, well, how do I find those people, right, whom I can connect with and we can support one another? I think you do have to put yourself out there so that people can find you, you know, that you can find each other, because there might be people that you don't know, you haven't grown up with, you may not have had anything else in common with except for this particular thing, but they have to, like, you know, find you. Like, you have to, like you said, we talked about, you know, social media presence and getting things out there so people can say, hey, what do you think about this? You know, inbox me, you know, and then you kind of start building your own, you know, your tribe. But you have to put yourself out there. You can't keep all of that creative process or ideas to yourself, because then you won't be able to find the support that you very much need in order to actualize your dream.
And you can't get discouraged, folks, when you do start acting on whatever it is, when your inner circle, including family,
yes,
if they don't support you.
And they won't. And there are a lot of people that who will not support you, and they'll do everything in their power to tell you 900 ways why you're wrong and you're going to be a failure.
Right. Or even like my niece, my oldest niece, oh, I love her. She's selling like body products, like body scrubs.
Wow.
And so I've been buying, and I had a conversation with her. She's frustrated because she's like, my family and friends, they're not buying anything. And I'm like, oh, honey, those aren't your peeps.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take it personally. You got to find your peeps. Find your tribe. You know,
right. And you find them, they find you, you find each other, but you have to, like, you have to be in the place and, or the space. So you have to create the space now, especially, you know, during this, you know, pandemic, you have to find your space, like your virtual space. You have to get yourself out there and people will find you, you will find each other, and it'll be so much easier than, you know, trying to connect with people or trying to convert them. I call them, you know, trying to convert them into seeing your way. And, you know, you spend so much time trying to convert people and trying to convince them how this is going to be great. And, you know, that you're going to be successful, that you take away time from your creative process and your purpose. And you get sidetracked and you start believing that they're right. And they're not.
And then that's when you quit.
And that's when you quit. Yep.
Because you haven't explored the hundreds of thousands of other people that are out there that might want what you have. Mm-hmm. You're focusing on the family and the people you went to high school with, you know, whoever. And some of those people will support you. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But you have to be prepared to put yourself out there.
Yes. No matter what, no matter what the naysayers say and all their attempts to, you know, tear you down, you know, you have to, there has to be something inside of yourself that you're like, you have to find that sliver of motivation that will propel you. Like I said, you know, going to Los Angeles and being in the music business, you know, I used all the hate and turned it into like, you know, my motivation. It's like, I'm going to let this propel me forward. All the stuff that people say. And it wasn't like I was trying to prove them wrong. I was just trying to become, you know, be more successful and prove myself right. And it just helped me. All that negativity really helped me just keep pushing forward when there were days that I didn't have any money or I didn't know where I was going. I was sleeping on, you know, someone's floor or didn't know what I was going to eat and if I would make it. And there were a lot of dark moments. And I didn't have a lot of support. Just a few people that were on the same journey as I was. And we were starving together. You know what I mean? We put our buddy together and go to the grocery store and cook meals for each other because we all had a common goal. We were a tribe and we were going to win no matter what. So we, you know, people, like I say to people, I would say to people, just keep doing it. Just keep going. Forget about what these other people are saying. I wouldn't say divorce yourself from them, but you might have to. You may have to leave them where they are and you keep ascending.
And don't be surprised when they come back once you've reached the heights.
They will come back. That is a given. They will come back. And they will have forgotten about all the negative things they said to you because they want something from you. But you smile and you just go ahead and let them have their moment. But you already know because you won. You know what I mean? Because you have succeeded and you are ascending. You're on your way up and you're going to continue to do so. And you needed those people. Honestly, I needed those people because I think if I had all of the support in the world, I might not have done it. I probably wouldn't have taken the leap. So I think it's sometimes they're necessary. They serve a purpose, actually. They do serve a purpose. Yes.
If people want to learn more about you or reach out to you, maybe they need some counseling services, how can they reach out to you?
Well, I am building my website, A Better Mind, A Better Me. And but the telephone number that they can reach me and leave messages, 703-647-3678. Again, that's 703-647-3678 or via email at arad.grimes, grimes@gmail.com.
Now, are you offering, I guess, telehealth or?
Yes. So my business, this arm of the business, as you will, if you know, this arm of my brand is telehealth services only. I do some face-to-face, but this is mostly what I do is telehealth.
Because you are located in?
I'm located in Alexandria, Virginia.
Right. I know a lot of my guests, folks, think, you know, everybody's from Atlanta. They're not all from Atlanta, folks.
Right. So, and I'm licensed, yeah, in Virginia, Indiana, and Washington, D.C.
There you have it. Thank you so much, Dara, for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's great talking to you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Another great episode, this time with my dear friend, Dara Grimes. Go Hard Chicks, make sure you reach out to Dara if you have questions or need advice or counseling. I know she'd be glad to hear from you all. And once again, Go Hard Chicks, thank you for the continued support of this podcast. It really means a lot. And as I always ask, please leave a rating and review. Leaving a rating and review really helps me to continue to bring on great Go Hard Chick guests like Dara. Once again, Go Hard Chicks, thank you for listening and take care.